up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 148. And this episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that gives us a little kickback here and, of course, helps the podcast keep on going. With me, as always, is Derek. What's up, Derek?
Not much. What's going on, Bob?
Well, you know, just another week in tech. Well, we were supposed to have reviews of the RTX cards on Monday, but that got pushed back till actually will be tomorrow. So by the time you listen to this, those reviews will be out there. Nice. But yeah, another week until they come out as well. So it's just a kind of a waiting game in tech. Not a whole lot of announcements, but some really funny and interesting stuff going on.
Yeah, for sure.
But let's just jump into our reviews because we have four reviews this week, so it's a big week for us. Yeah. When it comes to reviews and some pretty awesome products. So first, we'll talk about Patriot's Viper RGB memory. I took a look at the 16GB DDR4 3000 kit. This is a dual channel kit, two 8GB DIMMs here. And of course, this is their RGB memory. Now, everybody has their own RGB memory, different design. I actually like this design. It's a little different than some of the other ones that are out there. One thing I really like is that they do offer it in white or black heat spreader. So if you're looking for a certain color for your build, you can kind of match it up. Black, of course, goes with so many things, but there are a few white motherboards out there and white components that you can match these white heat spreaders with, which I like. The RGB lighting is really good. I think that the diffuser that they use at the top really lights up the entire module really well. And they've kind of added a little bit, you know, this is a Viper memory kit. Patriot Viper is like their gaming brand. And they have the Viper logo on the heat spreader, but they have the eyes cut out so that the RGB lights shine through it. Just a kind of little nice little touch there, which I do like. I think it's pretty cool. And the thing that, of course, all of these memory kits, all these RGB memory kits, they should be compatible with all of your motherboard software, which this kit is. So it's, you know, everything, Asus Aura Sync, MSI Mystic Light, ASRock, Polychrome, and Gigabyte RGB Fusion. So it works with all that. But on top of that, they have their own software, which I thought was really good. I'm a fan of companies that make their own RGB software, just because it allows more control over the memory, and it just enables more, and it makes it so there's no conflicts. If you really want to customize it, you can go ahead and do that. So, you know, for this being their first RGB memory kit, the software is actually good. Super easy to use. I believe there's 7 different effects that you can scroll through. And on each module itself, there's 5 RGB LEDs. You can individually control each one. So you can have different colors going up through. You can kind of design it to do whatever you want to do. You can change brightness levels. You can turn the RGBs completely off if you want. Say you have this in a bedroom or dorm room and you want your computer running throughout the day or night, you can turn your RGBs completely off if you want to. So just good software. Performed pretty well. It's not the best DDR4 kit that we've tested by any means, but it's not designed to be. I think, you know, these RGB kits, they're designed for the RGBs. They're not the super high-end, you know, high-bend memory kits that we've seen. They're just, you know, they're RGB kits. They're designed. The RGB is what people are buying them for. So, yeah, I think this is just a good kit. I like the RGB coverage on them. They worked with Asus Aura Sync, which I tested. But, again, you have your own software as well. I think they look good. I don't know your opinion on the diffuser up top. What you think about it, but I think it looks pretty good.
It's tough to judge these things from the pictures. You kind of have to see them in person sometimes. I kind of feel like it's maybe from the pictures, like it's overdone on the Viper theme, but I think that in person it looks like they probably look pretty cool when they're in there.
Yeah, they definitely look good. I was a fan. I always, when it comes to software, I'm always like, yep, it's not gonna work. When it comes to this type of software, we've seen it so many times, but it worked flawlessly. So I was really surprised at that. Being that this is Patriot's first kit, we usually see issues down the line with this stuff. But one thing they do caution is that their software is not compatible with, say, Aura Sync. So if you're running Aura Sync, you need to close that app out and then run their software,
yeah.
or vice versa. If you run them, the two of them together, they'll conflict, and then you'll have all kinds of issues. So that's something to keep in mind. That's like with most softwares we've noticed, like you can't run NZXT CAM and AuraSync at the same time anymore. Like there's a lot of conflicts now.
I mean, yeah, and that's sort of always been. It's just we're seeing it with RGB stuff. Like you, even hardware monitoring, you really are not supposed to run more than one monitoring program at the same time because they're drawing information, pulling, and messing each other up.
So. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I really like this kit. The kit that we reviewed is selling for $229 on Amazon, so it's not incredibly expensive. But again, you're going to pay a premium for RGB modules, especially ones like this that you have full per RGB or per LED control on.
Yeah. So that was for them. You said $229 for 16 gigs?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So again, not the cheapest, but yeah, works really great and is compatible with all your motherboard software. So if you have a lot of stuff, like, you know, if you have stuff connected to your RGB headers and you want everything to interact the same, it will, which is a plus, because we've seen RGB modules come out that aren't compatible. And it kind of just messes the whole flow up of everything too, if you're really trying to achieve that ultimate RGB look, I think.
Yeah. You almost might as well not bother with that part if you can't connect them together.
Yeah, so really good kit. Definitely worth checking out if you're, you know, interested in a RGB DDR4 kit. And that brings us to another product, which I think is a great product for a lot of consumers, is Toshiba's OCZ RC100. And that is their very small NVMe SSD. This is the drive that they want to bring NVMe speeds to the mainstream, and that's a big deal. You know, we all thought when SSDs came out, like, it was incredibly fast, you know, and SSDs pretty much max out at 550 megabytes a second read and write.
Right.
We've seen NVMe drives go to, you know, 3500 megabytes a second read and write. So what Toshiba is doing is bringing out a product that's going to give you 1600 megabytes a second read, around 1000 or 1050 megabytes a second write, in a very small low power package, which they have here. And it's a good drive. It's a solid drive. It's going to be faster than, of course, your normal hard drive, but it's going to be faster than your SSD, your 2.5 inch SATA based SSD as well. It's super small. So again, you're saving space in your case because you have no drives to install. This installs directly on your motherboard. Super small package as well. So we have the 240 gig version. I believe all versions are in this 42 millimeter size. The typical, tiny. Yeah, the typical NVMe drive is 80 millimeters, so about half that size. Very small package. We don't know anything about the controller, because what Toshiba has done is they put the controller, NAND, and everything on a single chip. Everything is on a single chip. So it's just one chip on there that does everything. I think it's great. I think that, you know, pricing on this, on the 240, is $105, which is around 43 cents a gigabyte, which is a little, it's not super aggressive, but as you get into the higher capacities thing, or the 480 at least, gets a little bit more aggressive. So if you're looking for that fast speed, especially for, say, a boot drive, like a Windows drive where you want that speed, or an OS drive, or not an OS drive, a game drive, even though 480 gigabytes, that's the max that they have right now, still will, you know, do a good job there, and will give you really fast speeds, much faster than a normal SSD. And obviously, if you're coming from a traditional hard drive, this thing is going to be like night and day. So yeah, it's a good drive. It's compatible with the OCZ SSD Toolbox software, which is the best, in my opinion, best SSD Toolbox software out there. It allows you to monitor your drive. It allows you to update firmware super easily. It allows you to secure erase, which is really important if you're, say, selling your computer or the drive or anything like that. So yeah,
cool.
Just a great product.
Looks like middle of the road speeds.
Yeah, it's middle of the road speed when it comes to NVMe. You know, we've tested a lot of the higher end ones that are around, you know, 2,500, 3,000 megabytes a second. But again, those are at a much higher price point than what this drive is.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's good. I like that Toshiba is doing this to bring that speed to the mainstream, because again, right now the mainstream is SATA based SSDs, and you know, you're maxing out at 550 megabytes a second on that. So
yeah, hard to argue with the price.
Basically twice the speed. Yeah.
Super hard to argue with the price.
Yeah, so good stuff there from Toshiba. And then Ryan took a look at the HyperX PulseFire Surge gaming mouse. So this, you know, HyperX, which is from Kingston, that's their gaming brand. They had a lot of success with headsets. One of my favorite headsets is their Cloud Alpha and the Cloud 2 before that, and the original Cloud, actually. Really great gaming headsets, and they ventured into other gaming devices. We reviewed a couple of the keyboards, and now we have one of their mice. And this is one of those, you know, FPS, I would say, style gaming mice. Good components inside. So you have a PixArt 3389 sensor and Omron switches, which, if you know, yeah, you've heard of Omron switches, they're like pretty much the best you can use. That's like the Cherry MX, yep, of the mouse world. So you know that this mouse is going to last a long time.
Lots of clicks.
Yeah, lots of clicks for sure. And Ryan really enjoyed this mouse. He gave it a 9 out of 10. It does have RGB lighting, of course.
Well, why not?
Yeah, as everything does these days. But yeah, it looks like and when it talks about the RGB lighting, there's 33 individual LEDs. So it's a ring that goes around the entire time. You can individually control at least part of them or like sections of it, so you can kind of create your own effect there, which is cool. This does come with software, so this does come with the HyperX engine. I can't say it. Yeah, their own software, which allows you to easily, create macros, change your buttons, adjust the RGB lighting, and all that kind of stuff. And it seems to work really well. I didn't really have any major issues with it.
Cool.
But yeah, you can actually individually control. I'm looking at the software. You can individually control all 32 LEDs.
Cool. Looks simple too.
It's simple. That's a thing that we've been coming back to. While having in-depth software is good sometimes, I think having simple software helps out a lot.
Like overly complex software, for this RGB thing, is almost like programming. How in-depth you have to get with some of the stuff, which some people are into. Some people just want to make their stuff look cool and move on. Can you use through the same software? That's one of the things that I like think about when I see different devices from, like, okay, so this is a great mouse, but am I going to get a keyboard from a different company and then I have to run their lighting software too?
Yeah, we'll see. That's the thing, HyperX makes the headset, the keyboard, and the mouse now, and I believe they have mouse pads that might have RGB lighting. I'm not sure though. I haven't looked recently. But they make all that stuff, and of course we have HyperX memory with RGBs as well. Cool. So yeah, we're getting to that point where all these companies are realizing that they need good software. We needed it just for customizing our keys and in our mouse buttons. But now because of the RGBs, that they need software that it actually works and it's easy to use to customize RGBs. And I think that's why we're getting actually good software for once.
Yeah. Otherwise, the product doesn't work otherwise.
Definitely check out that review if you're in the market for a new mouse. And the final review, which we talked about last week towards the end of the podcast, is we've been getting a lot of requests for gaming chairs, to review gaming chairs, and they're from companies that we've never heard of, and these companies are like only on Amazon. They don't have a website.
Basically non-existent.
And I think gaming chairs have become that product that everybody's making. I mean, every company that we know, big company, small company, Corsair, Thermaltik, Asus has a gaming chair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they're not all making them. They're all putting their label on one.
Yeah, so I thought, okay, out of all these requests, we'll take one and we'll see if it's any different. The chair that we're talking about is $164, making it one of the least expensive gaming chairs out there.
Mm-hmm.
which, you know, some of these really high-end chairs can go to up to $600. So what's the difference between a chair that's $164 and one that might be $250, one that might be $300? You know, what's the difference? So the one that we got in is from a company called Sunmay. And if you go on their Amazon page, they make office chairs and gaming chairs. That's kind of like their thing. And there's no product name for this at all, which is common on Amazon when it comes to these OEM type things. It's just called the Gaming Chair Ergonomic Racing Chair Adjustable Computer Desk Swivel Chair with Soft PU Armrest.
It's just a bunch of just a bunch of search words.
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's what it is. So, you know, I got this chair, and the first thing that I noticed was that one of the pieces was broken. This happens when there's not a lot of quality control with these products. Yeah. So it wasn't a huge deal. It wasn't a crucial part. It was like the cover for the connection on the side that connects the top of the chair to the bottom of the chair, basically. Yeah. So it wasn't a big deal. So with that aside, put the chair together, no issues putting it together. Now, once I had it all together, the thing that I noticed was the chair was small. Not too small, but smaller than the other chairs that I've reviewed. Not as much cushioning. The more cushioning I feel, the better you're going to feel in the chair for long periods of time, in my opinion. So there was less cushioning and all that kind of stuff. Secondly, the armrests, it says that they're adjustable on Amazon. They're really not. You can't move them up or down, or side to side, like we've seen with every gaming chair that I've reviewed, at least. So there's no adjustment there. You know, those are the kind of shortcomings of this. The final shortcoming of this chair is that most gaming chairs, you can adjust that backrest all the way down, like at least to 180 degrees. This one only goes to 130. So if you're somebody who wants like lay back and relax, or say you have, you know, your game, a lot of people have like their gaming monitor and then above it, they have a TV. Cause that's like the room to hang out in. And if you want to lay all the way back, and this one, you can't do that. You can only go to 130 degrees. So, those are my thoughts on it. I think it's a decent chair. But some of the other chairs that I reviewed are right around the $229 price range, which is only $65 difference, really. I think you're much better suited with those than this. One, when I reviewed all of those other four chairs, I had no broken parts. Everything came as it was, no issues. You know what I mean? Two, I have armrest control, which is very important. Not everybody's the same size, so you want to be able to move your armrest up or down. And three, the other chairs are just more comfortable and have more cushioning. So that's my thoughts. Yeah. So I think that, again, you're going to see a lot of these pop up because it's a very popular product right now, gaming chairs. And I would say do some research. I don't even believe if you go on Amazon, there's no Amazon reviews of this product.
Wow.
So when I originally did the review, there's a couple now.
Six.
There's six reviews, so not a whole lot.
I'm gonna go ahead and say that a lot of these were paid for. most of them are very good.
And that's the thing with Amazon products too. So you have to watch out. So that's kind of what we wanted to do with this review. Kind of give you guys an idea of this is the quality difference, because again, you know, we're all for a product that's significantly less if it's just as good as quality, but a lot of times we don't find that, and that was the case with this chair.
Not terribly surprising. So
you had said last week that you kind of thought that's what the case was going to be, and that's what it was. So you can check out the review. You know, I go into more detail on everything, but just if you bump up to the $229 price range, which puts you in the range of a lot of chairs, you'll find a much better value there. So that brings us to Case Mod Friday. And this week we have a build from our friends at GGF LAN Party. And they did a build this build inside of the Lianli PC011, which we've seen a lot of builds in this case. It's just kind of made to show off the inside of your system. We actually got a sneak peek of this case at CES. But they did a sort of RGB build, kind of based with white water cooling.
White.
I think it looks good.
White paneling, black radiators, and lots of RGBs. Got a unicorn running around in there.
Yeah, so they have RGB, obviously, on the motherboard, CPU block, GPU block. They have two 360 rads, right? If I'm looking at that right?
I think so, yeah.
Two 360 rads with three fans each. So you have six RGB fans. And they, it looks like they have an RGB strip that goes around the res that's actually part of the motherboard tray, which is actually kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's got some a cool design in that.
Oh, and RGB memory. Sorry.
of course. I really like the... It's the colors. It might be just the white offsets it. I don't know. Maybe it's the diffusers, but the colors are all really soft, and it kind of gives it like a marshmallowy kind of look. Yeah. That's the way I would describe it. So I think it looks really good. What do they have for a GPU in the thing?
It's
a strange block.
They have a GTX 1080 Ti.
Okay.
It's the Hall of Fame edition card.
Okay.
From Galax, which is an amazing card.
Gotcha.
And I believe that has the white PCB. I'm almost positive, so that it has to look badass in this as well. They kept the same backplate on there, but yeah, I think it looks really good. I think that, as you said, it matches the that kind of, as you said, marshmallow look, kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of matches all that, but I think it just overall it just looks good.
It does, and that case really. I mean, it's like it's almost like an aquarium or something. The way it displays what's inside it, it looks so nice. The huge tempered glass panels on it, and I guess we should point out that their water cooling looks fantastic too. It's kind of the point with its hard tubing where you see it so much that it's hard to stand out. So you. Yeah, kind of stop noticing, even though it's super, a ton of it is super good. The level here is super high. I kind of think, looking at the unlighted version, I think they actually might have smoked the tubing itself, which is what would give it that clear, or that softer look to it. So that was definitely on purpose on their part.
Yeah, I think it just looks great.
Yeah, I dig it a lot.
GGF does really good work.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really good work. They have a style that... Yeah, they have a style that like everybody knows now, and it's just really, really good.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So yeah, definitely, definitely check this one out. And again, I guess it is more of a mod. I was gonna say it's not so much of a mod, but I guess it is with the custom res there. That's a lot of work.
The motherboard tray, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it built? Is it the motherboard tray replaced? Like, is it a replacement motherboard tray, or is that just covering
sitting on top of
the whole side? Yeah.
I'm not sure.
No, I think it's sitting on top because you can, in the one photo, you can just see the background of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, right. You know what that spot is? That's actually a spot for a radiator mount, I believe, on the backside. So they just mounted that res there instead. That's cool.
Yeah.
That case is fantastic. I'd love
one of those cases. It's great in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely go ahead and check out that feature. We have a link to GGF's website. So, you know, they have a ton of builds on there that you guys can check out as well. And, of course, we have our full section of Case Mod Friday builds. So
yes. You
can go ahead and check all that out. So we'll jump right into the news. And we touched on it at the beginning of the podcast. But NVIDIA is actually delaying the availability of their RTX 20 series cards. So if you pre-ordered an RTX 2080 or RTX 20 Ti, they were supposed to arrive on... the 20th, but
on your door on the 20th,
I believe so. Okay. Yeah.
And when has it been pushed back to?
A week from that, so the 27th.
Bummer. Yeah.
So it's pushed back a week. I would be kind of disappointed because like at least like a couple of my friends, like when something new comes out, like a new game or something, they like request the week off work to play that game or to, you know,
I haven't done that in years, but I do know the feeling.
There's people like that that have done that. So if I have to wait another week for this, you know, especially if I ordered a TI and spent that much money, I would be like,
oh God, yeah,
you know. So I've heard a lot of rumblings about the availability of these cards. You know, this happens a lot of time at launch. But, you know, when you put a date out there, you should be able to at least meet that shipping date, because usually the shipping date is much later than the, you know, like, you know, when you initially announced the card and stuff. Yeah. So another week, I assume maybe they might get them, you know, a couple days before that. We don't know.
Yeah, it could happen.
But yeah, so and with that, the reviews have been pushed back. So today is the 18th. The reviews were initially supposed to launch on Monday, but they've been pushed back to the 19th. So the 2080, I believe the NDA for that was the 17th, and then the 2080 Ti was the 19th. They've both been pushed back to the 19th. So tomorrow, expect a lot of GTX or RTX 20 series reviews. There should be a lot out there on launch. I expect it. So it's just another couple days for to see what the performance is, and if you ordered one, another week to wait till you get one. So kind of disappointing, but
yeah, could be worse. The biggest guy that's getting let down is if he's, you know, new build and he doesn't have a GPU at all to use. Yeah. So when we still have until November for Battlefield 5. Is that correct, or am I?
I believe so. I think it's like November 17th or 19th. I'm not specifically sure.
Something like that. Yeah. So yeah. Nobody really getting let down on that front as far as like
being able to.
I mean, because like that's the ultimate combination, is a brand new game like that and a brand new GPU. Like, you're having a good weekend.
Oh, yeah. And if I like took that weekend off work, you know, told the girlfriend, don't talk to me for the weekend whatever it may be, you know, you just, I'm in my man cave and all that.
Suddenly you gotta push that back. Yeah.
Can make
for some hard times.
Yeah. So, talking about the RTX series, one thing that's come to light is that NVIDIA is giving the GPU, which is the TU102, they're giving it two different device IDs. And for those who don't know, a device ID on a product allows Windows or whatever OS you're using to say what device is installed, so it can, you know, it can load that driver, and it tells the software which commands to send or which commands cannot be sent. And it appears that these TU102 GPUs, there's going to be two distinct device IDs, and people think this might not be a big deal, but NVIDIA has never done this. It doesn't matter what, you know, GTX 1080 Ti that you got. They all had the same device ID. What NVIDIA is doing is that they're doing two different device IDs, and one will be for the higher bend. And the consensus is that these will be more expensive for, you know, the board partners. The higher bend GPUs will have one device ID, and a second lower bend GPU will have a different device ID, and the higher bend will be allowed for factory overclocked, but the lower bend will not be. So this basically stops people from buying, say, you know, like the Asus Turbo card, which is typically under MSRP, getting that card and then flashing that card with like an ROG Strix BIOS, so that you have the factory overclocks and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting that NVIDIA is doing that. It's obviously stops like this, I guess you want to call them, the BIOS hackers out there from doing something like that, which is easily done. It's been done for years.
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna stop. Shit.
Yeah. It doesn't stop. It does not stop. Manual overclocking. So if you just go into whatever GPU software you have, you can manually overclock. It is likely that the lower bend GPUs won't overclock well.
I feel like this is just like creating a lot of talk about something that's always been, and it's just being drawn in a different, you know, shown in a different light here. It's always, there's always been binning involved in GPUs. I think more than anything, it's actually maybe not. I think one point of view is that this actually protects the consumer, in that the aftermarket builder now can't just use a low bin part in like their overclocked edition card. They have to, you know, they have to use one of those A's, those A branded cards. So it's interesting. I'm curious how deeply written the device ID is, in like how unchangeable it is. I doubt it's unchangeable.
Yeah, it's, I don't believe you can change it. That's why like a lot of the people who are making a big deal about this are the BIOS people, who, you know, you just throw another BIOS on that card and it acts as if it's the other card.
Yeah, I mean, there's always somebody that finds a way around like whatever firmware protection is in place. The things we've seen in the past, like cards that are totally different being flashed, you know, like two completely different cards being flashed to the same thing. Like, yeah. I don't doubt that this can be done. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing. First time that anybody's has seen it. So hopefully it might enable for the lower binned cards to be sold under MSRP, which would be nice for somebody who just wants, you know, a normal card or something like that. So we'll have to see what comes of that. Talking about the RTX 2080 and 2080 Ti, Final Fantasy, the Windows benchmark page, they've been updated with, this is official from like the game's benchmark. It's not like this is like from a random person. This is from the Final Fantasy game benchmark. When you do it, it puts it into a database, obviously. And these graphs public are database. From that. Yeah. Public database. So we have RTX 2080 Ti and RTX 2080 results from that benchmark in 4K and 1440p in both standard quality and high quality. Looking at the results here, the RTX 2080 Ti just crushes everything.
It's kind of a beast, isn't it?
And even beats out NVIDIA's own Titan V, which is a $3,000 card. So basically, you're getting more performance for half the price.
I'm trying to remember what the specs on that Titan V are. It's basically a Quadro card, isn't it? That's been kind of converted. Yeah, it's sort of with all the tensor cores and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something that's pretty impressive. You know, again, this is one benchmark, but still, this kind of gives you an idea of performance here. You can also see the RTX 2080 beating the GTX 1080 Ti as well. So that should give you some idea of performance there.
Not by a lot.
Not by a whole lot.
Even in standard quality, it's kind of barely above it.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's the Ti, though. Sorry, I was looking at the 2080 versus the Ti. Where is it? Oh, wait. Okay, so it is significantly faster than the 1080. Did you do the math on percentage?
I did not
faster?
Do the math on the differences between these, but
one second.
Let's do the math.
33%.
Yeah, so
it's about in line with what they were claiming, right? Isn't did they claim 30% faster?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. So
that was at standard quality 2160, so 4K.
Yeah.
Cool. Tomorrow's gonna be fun.
Yeah, tomorrow we'll be able to sift through all this, but to have this information out there, again, gives the buyer, if you were still looking to pre-order, which you'll again have to wait, but it gives you some idea of, you know, what to expect and all that. And of course, we love these benchmarks before the real reviews come out, always. Yeah. So
I feel like we know. Yeah, feel so, like we know something.
Yeah, exactly. Our final piece of RTX news, because this is the week leading up to the launch, so you got to expect that. It looks like we will have GTX or Yeah, GTX 1060 and GTX 1050 successors coming in 2019. So you won't see the lower end RTX cards, whether they're, I assume they're going to be called the RTX 2060 and the RTX 2050. You won't see those until 2019, possibly a little preview at CES. I'm not sure.
Maybe. Actually, I could see that. For yeah. for entry level cards, I could see them doing CES. Yep.
Yeah. So, it will be really interesting to see this the performance of these cards. You know, getting say 1070 performance out of the 2060, wouldn't be bad. I'd say
that should be expected. You know? Yeah. I'd say that should be expected. What is that? That's 1080 at 120.
I would think so. At least the 1070 Ti does it.
Okay, but, so in that range, I guess. Yeah. that's acceptable. I think that at least solid 1080 performance should be expected from the lowest end.
Yeah, especially right. with this generation.
It's going to be expensive. They're both of them are going to be expensive. Yeah. There's no doubt.
Yeah, so that's something to look forward to. Yeah, so it looks like if you're looking to wait for the lower end cards because you don't have a lot of money or anything like that, probably the only RTX cards are going to be the 2080, 2070, and 2080 Ti up until 2019. Yeah. So you have a little bit.
Honestly, let those 20 series cards get on the market and then just go buy a used 10 series, like 1080, maybe 1080 Ti, and you're probably going to be in the same price range for what you're going to pay for 1060 or 2060, 2070. That's my prediction.
Yeah, and again, expect those. The 10 series cards should, especially around holiday, prices of those cards should drop significantly.
Ooh, some Black Friday deals might be inbound.
Yeah, we might actually have actual
deals.
GPU Black Friday
deals. Dude, how many years has it been?
Forever. I can't remember one.
So. We know they've got all that extra stock, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotta move it.
So moving out of NVIDIA stuff, and we'll move over to AMD. You know, when AMD announced their second generation Ryzen, of course, we had the Ryzen 7 2700X. And people were like, where's the 2800X, which should have been the successor to the Ryzen 7 1800X, because that's what their naming scheme was. And they kind of hinted that they'll release a 2800X when the time comes.
nobody really knew.
Yeah, nobody really knew what it might be or anything like that. It was still said to be an 8-core, 16-thread part, just based on all the information that was available at the time. According to a new report, is that the Ryzen 7 2800X could be a 10-core, 20-thread part that AMD will now position to compete against Intel's upcoming i9-9900K. This, a Phantom screenshot, again, Phantom, shows a Cinebench results of a 10-core, 20-thread Ryzen 7 2800X. Beating a lot of Intel parts, including a Xeon, a 12-core, 24-thread Xeon. Yeah. Older parts, though. Yeah, older parts for sure. Yeah, quite old. One, we don't know the validity of the screenshot. Two, I could see this is totally possible. I could see AMD having this just for that.
They were waiting for this. We even speculated on this when we said it because we knew that Intel would be coming out with something.
Yeah, in Intel's part, the i9-9900K is 8-core, 16-thread.
Yeah.
So, this could easily compete, I think, at least in multi-core.
It's
be interesting, I feel.
I feel like, well, we know Intel still has per-core performance.
Yes.
So to that 9900K, I think is going to be a beast of a part. So.
Oh, yeah.
We will see.
We'll definitely see. But again, this is like a rumor. This is not confirmed or anything like that. So just take it at what it is.
Super rumor.
Yes. A really cool product that was launched this past week, at least I think is cool. Silverstone announced their ECM 23, which is basically a slot in M.2 cooler that is basically, what'd you call it? Like a, just a half, not even a half height. It's like smaller than a half height.
Yeah.
PCI Express card or adapter that has a heatsink on it that basically allows you to slot in your NVMe drives if you don't have a M.2 slot on your board, or just,
or you fill them all up, or you, yeah,
or you want to look cool and have these, which I think will look pretty cool.
Pretty sick.
And it's just like, it reminds you of
replace that heatsink with a water block.
Yeah, there you go. This kind of reminds me of like cartridges, like putting cartridges in like a system, like a gaming
system. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, it does. Almost. It does look like that when you slot it into the PCI. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I read the title, I was a little confused. I was like, wait, you can slot in the M.2 and out? Like it's a hot swap thing? No.
Yeah.
I get it though. I get it after I read through.
Yeah. And like, again, it does have a heat sink and a back plate. So this should keep your overheating M.2s nice and cool. No word on pricing, but it can't be super expensive. No.
It'll be high quality though. Silverstone is like the go-to for these little devices lately. Yeah. Like this is their like bread and butter. So
yeah, so I really like this device. It's just really cool and it allows you to install. You know, you do have a lot of extra PCI Express slots typically,
like
especially if you're doing a single card. Yeah. And again, this only needs to be 4x. It is a full 16 key, but it's only 4 are active, so you know, so yeah, even if you have that last slot, which is typically X4 electrical anyways, you'll be able to slot this in easily. So
and some of those boards where I mean you're using like one maybe two of like six slots, you can load up on some M.2 memory, like serious storage without any wiring. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, so really cool product. We just wanted to point that product out because I thought it was super cool. And our last, we'll go to our one before the last. Antec finally, like, officially teased their Torque case. This case that we saw at Computex, we talked about it then, how it looked pretty much very, very similar to Cougar's Conquer case. If you look at them both,
well, you see,
they're very similar.
Well, you see, Bob, the Cougar has a 90-degree rotation on the motherboard that the Antec case does not have. One faces down, the other faces up and out. So
yeah, and so Antec posted this on their one of their social media pages on Facebook.
Yeah,
and people basically told them that. It looks like the Cougar case. I like this from Antec because Antec has been so boring and plain, or they've released these like maybe one crazy case every couple years that nobody can afford.
Yeah.
This might be in that category.
Well, this is that. Because, like, this is not what they need. Like,
but their last big case, which was like the S10 or I forget what it was like nobody wanted it. I could see people actually wanting this case because it looks cool. I think this is a cool design. But it's too similar for me. I mean, we've seen that a lot with cases, but it's just too similar for me.
For being as abstract as it is, it's like not abstract at all when you compare it to the Cougar case.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. It's. Yeah. I mean, it looks cool, but it is not what Antec needs in their lineup. Like.
No.
Seriously. Every time I see one of these types of cases from them, I'm like, well, there's another nail in the coffin. There's a huge chunk of investment into the design and the build of that. And
again, this can't be cheap because that's aluminum.
It's gotta be it'll be like a $400 or $500 case.
Yeah. So
you're gonna give Antec $400 or $500? I don't know about that.
No, not at all. But yeah. We'll see when this comes out. Maybe we'll get one to review, and we'll tell you about it. I still think it's going to be a decent quality case, but I just
if it's all CNC of these cases
from
great,
from the Inwins to the Cougar case and a lot of them, they're just too expensive to justify. Why would I pay $500 for a case when I can pay $100 for a case and put $400 more into my graphics card or CPU or whatever?
100%. Especially when you can get such amazing cases for such little money. Like,
Or I can buy that gaming monitor that, you know, right? 144 hertz gaming monitor that I want for that $400, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot that can be done with that money, and it's just, yeah, I get this, but it's just not what Antec needs. Antec needs, like, a solid line of cases from mini ITX to extended ATX, a line that they all look similar, that are actually good.
And new. Corsair has a good line. Yeah. And different, like, and honestly, like these, they need to get there the middle of the line where, like, the meat of your sales are going to be. They need to dial that in, like, like real fast. There's no doubt, like, it was the Antec 900, wasn't it? That was, like, the case about 10 years ago. Like, they need another 900. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. They need a case that a lot of people can buy that's really good. We see it. I mean, everybody has that case.
Yes.
Everybody has that case.
Yes. They need a $130 case. That's nice. That's what they need.
Yeah. Yep. So, talking about things that are really funny. And,
oh, God, this is the best.
So, The Verge, which I'm sure most of you people have heard of. it's a major tech publication. It's a pretty big website. I would say it's one of the biggest. The Verge, Mashable.
Yeah.
Pretty big. So they, over the past weekend, they came out with a video on how to build a gaming PC. One, I like this from The Verge. I think that the more we get PC gaming into the mainstream, I'm a fan of. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, of course.
Of that.
Especially, it's such, because The Verge is such nerd news, right? Like, it's just it's just tech and science, basically. It's the entire page. So, like, reminding them that, hey, PC gaming, this is still the best thing. It's great.
Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of that. Well, I don't know. The video has been taken down. I won't tell you why. But if you watch the video, the person doing the video literally had no clue what they were doing. They said that you needed an Allen key to build a PC, which I don't think I've ever used an Allen key to build a PC. They said you need a Swiss Army knife to... Actually, I have a list. I made a list in Notepad. Hold on.
Of the things that they say you need that you don't need.
Yeah, let's see. Hold on, let me bring it up here.
Oh, God. It was so cringeworthy.
They said you need a Swiss Army knife with a screwdriver on it. When you just need a screwdriver, you don't need the Swiss Army knife.
You absolutely do not want the Swiss Army knife. That thing is cumbersome. It's gonna fall out of your hand. It's gonna possibly bend and break something on your motherboard, especially if you have, like, your socket exposed for some reason. How about you don't? Yeah,
he called zip ties tweezers.
That was the best.
That was might have been the funniest thing. he put on an anti-static bracelet, but didn't connect the grounding wire, so it does nothing.
His Livestrong bracelet.
He called the IO shield a brace.
Yeah.
He called 2666 memory fast when that's the DDR4 standard. he installed the memory incorrectly. He put them right beside each other, so there's no dual channel connectivity.
And in the middle of the slots too, I believe. So that's weird.
Yeah, the two middle slots.
Yeah, nice choice.
You know. One of the, actually, probably the worst thing that he said was that, you know, like, on every case, that there's pads where your power supply goes. There's pads there.
Yeah.
Those pads are anti-vibration pads, or pads so that your, power supply doesn't scratch up your case, or you don't scratch up your power supply for the most part, or to like level it off. So it doesn't, like,
yeah,
well, droop down.
Yeah, it's just mostly anti-vibration, though. It keeps it away from the case.
He said that these were insulating pads, and that if your power supply touches the case, it will short circuit the power supply or your case or your system.
Yeah, and then he immediately went and ran screws into the back of it. Hey, dummy, good work. Doesn't quite understand the way that whole electricity bit works, but hey.
Yeah,
dude. No, for me, because I'm the AIO guy around here. Watching him install that AIO was so cringeworthy. Oh my. He's like, every all-in-one water cooler comes with pre-installed thermal paste. No, they don't. It's basically just Corsair, the one that you have in your hand.
Yeah.
But it's always a good idea to add more. And then he goes that and he adds like a whole freaking tube to the surface, yeah, it's top of the CPU.
And he did it so wrong. There's definitely going to be air bubbles, not only because he used two different types of thermal paste, is because the way he put it on there was, it was the one of the most cringeworthy things
it
I've
was
seen.
The worst thermal paste application I have ever seen in my entire life.
And he mounted the radiator without fans on it. They tried to hide it, but there was no fans on it.
Yeah.
And then he mounted the radiator with the long screws for the fans.
He ran the fan screws all the way through the radiator. And then he complained about how long it was taking.
Because you're drilling through the actual radiator instead of like how you should be doing it.
Those screws are 8 times longer than they're supposed to be.
At the end of the day, too, there was horrible cable management, which isn't that big of a deal.
That I expected.
When you're as big of a publication as The Verge, which is a very big publication, probably one of the top 5 tech publications online, I would say.
Yeah, it's big.
At least top 10. And the amount of money you have and resources you have. I don't know how this person works there.
What? Do you know who he is, what he does?
I looked at his Twitter today, and it's all about, like, tech stuff.
Yeah.
It's all about, like, graphics and GPU and all that kind of stuff.
Really?
I'm not sure, but...
Dude, I think that...
I don't feel that he's ever built a computer before, so I don't know how credible any of his articles are or upcoming articles will be on gaming and or on performance of graphics cards or anything like that. And to test this system, which was a GTX 1080 Ti system, he used Dota 2 and Arma.
Loading that thing.
And he was like, I'm getting 120 FPS in Dota 2. Well, of course you are. It can run on an iPad.
You can run it on your phone.
Yeah. So the biggest thing out of this is that, one, again, huge fan of The Verge putting out something like this.
Yeah.
But the information's totally wrong. And if you're a newbie to building a PC, you think The Verge is a credible source. You would think that. And if you watched this, you would be doing so many things wrong. He actually didn't even put all 4 of the thumb screws on the pump block.
Are you serious?
To secure it down. Yeah. The article's still online.
It's been edited.
Yeah. But he didn't do that. There's just so many things wrong. I mean, even just talking about certain things, this person didn't know what they were talking about. If I was an editor, if I was just somebody who's above him, should have known these things, or somebody.
This whole thing needs to be thrown away. That's all there is to it.
This whole thing within The Verge should have been taken care of. Now, initially, the initial backlash happened over the weekend on... People commented like crazy on the video saying he did this wrong. Like, they pointed out more than what we pointed out. We pointed out some of the bigger things, but there's a lot more.
You can get real nitpicky on it.
Yeah. So they turned off the comments and then they finally took the video down, but the article is still online. The article is still there. It's been heavily edited, I assume. But it's just not a good piece of work. At least, you know, when we do, say, our case reviews, we do, at least I think, pretty good cable management. Well,
to start with, we've done this before.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking through his, like, posts, and he's got a pretty broad spectrum of devices that he writes about. It's kind of concerning as far as his credibility. Maybe he knows... Like his, how do you describe like a phone? Like, what sort of tech is that?
That's like,
you know,
a
like
consumer
tech where you don't really get hands on with it. You know, maybe he's good with that. When watching it, what really struck me was that he is a software guy, and because I've seen some software guys when they start getting into hardware, it's just, you know, hands off, basically. Like, they shouldn't do it. So, yeah. That's what it struck me as, but.
Yeah. So, you can. A lot of people did reaction videos. The funniest one was by Kyle, Bitwit Kyle. He did his second character that he does called Lyle, which was really funny.
Yeah.
We'll have that linked in the show notes because I think that's hilarious and like made my day. But yeah, it was just really done bad, and I think this is what happens when the mainstream media wants to pick up on something that's gaining popularity, like PC gaming is. I mean, just Fortnite brought PC gaming into more of the mainstream than it already has been, but it's been going up for a while now. Yeah. So it's just really badly done, and this should be a lesson to any mainstream media that wants to put out content like this.
And this makes me think, like, did nobody at The Verge know? Does nobody at The Verge know anything about PC hardware?
Or like, where was like the?
Where's the editor?
Yeah, where's the editing? Like, where's the? Let's check this before we put it out. I mean, even the person editing the video should have been like, said something. I mean, it was not, I don't know. But I guess that's what happens when there's no, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. But they, The Verge, again, they took the video down. They issued a press release because a lot of people were, I guess you would say, online bullying the guy who did this. which, it, you know, the depths of the internet, especially YouTube, is a place for people like that. I'm not a fan of any of that kind of stuff. But I am a fan of everybody pointing out the mistakes because, again, just being, you want to put out correct information. Like if we had a video that we created that had misinformation on it and then somebody broke or ruined one of their components because of our poor installation video or something like that, we would feel bad and it would just be bad. And I think that's why a lot of people pointed those things out.
Yeah.
I guess that's all you can really say about it. I mean, they just did a bad job at this. Really bad job at it. So. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, but we'll have links to all that kind of stuff about that. And that brings us to what we have coming up next week. And next week, I'll be taking a look at another SSD. This is the traditional SATA SSD, and this one's from Gigabyte. So, you know, we talked about it a couple podcasts ago that how Gigabyte or Aorus wants to make everything in your PC, and this is one of their first solid-state drives, just a 2.5-inch drive, rated speeds of 530 megabytes a second read and 500 megabytes a second write. So just like your, I guess say the mainstream drive, not super expensive either.
Yeah.
And we have the 512 gigabyte version of that. And also be looking at the Fanatec Flick 2 gaming mouse. So I'm a huge fan, and it's still sitting in front of me as that Fanatec keyboard that I reviewed. And they sent us one of their gaming mice, and it's the Flick 2. So this is the second generation of their mouse. This is a mouse designed by gamers for gamers. I haven't had a lot of chance to play with it, so I can't really tell you that much. But if it's anything like the keyboard, I'm intrigued. And
yeah.
You know,
honestly, looking through the product page, I wouldn't have been looking forward to it so much, but based on your review of the keyboard, I'm fairly interested in seeing what you think.
Yeah, and again, you know, we see when it comes to mice, we see crazy designs, we see over the top stuff that you like, it intrigues you, but the performance of the mouse is bad. You know, just like Ryan's review of the HyperX mouse, it's nothing great to look at, but he liked the performance and the quality parts that were used, you know?
That's what counts with the mouse.
Yeah, so that's kind of, you know, so I have that. And then finally, I'll be taking a look at the Ragentech Iris 12 RGB fans. I have the triple pack of 120s.
Cool.
And you kind of had a chance to look at these. Were these the ones that were on the AIO? I think these are them.
That'll be a treat.
So this is not software based. It is the remote. Yeah. And you had some issues with these, so I will be testing these out and see if I have the same issues, and we'll let you guys know.
Cool.
But this is kind of like the newer version of their other ones, which I also reviewed, which were the Aorus 12, which not a massive fan because it, you know, there's not a whole lot of light there.
Yeah.
But these ones seem to have a lot more light and a lot more effects, which everybody wants, not just like, you know, like three effects. So interesting to check that out as well. So we'll have all of that for you. And of course, that brings us to the end of the podcast. That's where we talk about any tech stuff we did in the past week or anything like that. Did you get into any cool tech stuff?
I got a Wacom tablet.
Which, oh, yeah, we were talking about that before we started the podcast.
Before I actually just opened it. It just showed up from Amazon. It's they're just, you know, drawing tabs, editing tabs. So I'm going to look forward to using that in Photoshop to do some editing. If you're into that sort of thing at all, you know that using the mouse can be a serious headache when it comes to, like, a lot of the detail and stuff. So I was like, I got to give this a shot. This is, look at which model number it is. Super CTL 4100. It's basically, I don't think it's the cheapest one, but it's like only $69 on Amazon. It's on a little bit on sale. Pretty cheap enough to give it a shot, you know. Never used one before.
Yeah, I think that because those really can go up in price.
Yeah, from here it's basically like, well, you might as well spend $300. So
yeah, so I think it's a good way to try it out. And of course, if you're a Prime member, you have 30-day return, no questions asked. So
I do.
Yeah. So that's kind of a big deal as well. So,
how about yourself?
So yeah, I didn't really do anything. I tested products and, did all that. So nothing, nothing super crazy for me. I am redesigning our CPU cooler test system. So I haven't made a choice yet whether to go AMD or Intel. I haven't decided.
Hmm. Talking
we have both parts, so we have the 2800X as well as the 8700K, which I would say they're probably the two most popular CPUs
at the moment,
current gen CPUs. So it's between those two. I haven't decided what I'm gonna do it yet. So I'm gonna decide in the next couple days because I got some pretty cool Air CPU coolers in. To review, so I haven't decided which one I'm going to use yet. So
gotcha.
That's kind of all I really did. It's kind of redesigning that system and testing other products. So that is about it for this week, guys. As we always say, we'll have our full show notes page that is everything that we talked about. So again, we're talking about that Verge video. You can click through and see all the information on that or any of the products that we talked about. Go ahead and click through. And if you're looking for us on your favorite podcasting software or anything like that, it's just Think Computers, all one word. So until next week, catch you guys later.